But as we begin our program this evening, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Todd O'Boyle. He's a program director for Media and Democracy at Common Cause. And we invited him here this evening to talk about a very disappointing court decision that involves net neutrality. But first of all, welcome to our program, Todd. Glad you could be here.
Thank you.
Tell our listeners a bit about what you do at Common Cause as director of their Media and Democracy program.
Sure. Common Cause is best known for its good government and public integrity work, and our work to clean up elections and ensure full participation. So we often work on things like nonpartisan congressional redistricting, and we push back against some of the bad state laws that have been occurring in the states to restrict voter participation. And so that's what we're perhaps best known for, but we feel that if we want a fair hearing on our money and politics work, or if we want a fair hearing on our elections reform work, we have to reform the media. And because while I appreciate the opportunity to be here on WPKN and we value independent and alternative media, there's work has to be done on the corporate media as well to make sure that the issues are presented fairly and accurately and voters have a chance to inform themselves.
Well, thanks for that description, Todd. And getting to the point of what we're talking about this evening, explain to our listeners, if you would, what the appeals court ruled on last week, and also explain to our listeners a bit about the principle of net neutrality.
Sure, I'll start with net neutrality. The basic idea is that if you're a network provider, an internet service provider, say, you have to serve up content, take customers where they want to go, connect them to the services and applications of their choice on a non-discriminatory basis. What that means is that I, as a network provider, cannot create a fast lane for my select business partners and leave everybody else in a slow lane. So if you can imagine, your listeners should be a good way of thinking about this is that the local independent bookstore, you should be able to visit their webpage with the same responsiveness as the as Amazon.com or something like that. And what the court said was that the FCC's rules that prevent this sort of deal-making and these fast lanes, the rules that prevent service providers from blocking consumer access to content, were not valid as they were written. But the good thing here is that the court told the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, a different set of rules would pass judicial muster. So what we're asking the FCC to do is to write rules that will withstand litigation, will withstand judicial scrutiny.
Todd, for our listeners' benefit and mine, give us some examples of how net neutrality would protect us from some future form of sort of second-class citizenship, both for users, internet users, and internet content providers.
Sure. A good way to think about this is to think about the way that the traditional telephone network works. If I'm a small business person, I advertise for my services, and if anyone wants to, you know, get a hold of me, they can just punch in my number and the call will be connected in a neutral fashion. However, that's a net neutrality world. In a different world, every chain, link in the chain in the world of the you know, the network and the wires and all the connections, the providers, the people that own that infrastructure, could start working out deals and say, "Well, I don't think you should. I'm not going to connect your traffic unless you pay enough." And you can start erecting what you might think of as toll booths all along the internet. And what this means is that the principle of anyone can get started online, anyone can put something up online, anyone can connect to basically anyone else is now dependent on, well, who's going to pay the piper?
So the more money you would have, the more access you'd have, both in terms of as a user and as a content provider. So people who are at the margins and not multi-million or multi-billion dollar companies would necessarily not have as great an audience for their content as the folks with a lot of bucks. Is that the way to put it?
That's a good way of putting it, and it's seriously concerning for low-income users who can just barely afford an internet connection, if at all. It's not at all unrealistic to imagine that if this ruling stands, if the FCC doesn't fix this, that suddenly, you know, the $50 a month you pay for broadband is just going to get you a basic connection. But if you want news and information, if you want social networking, oh, that's all behind a higher pay tier, sort of like your cable television bill. If you're flipping through the channels and you think, oh, I want to go check out that sports channel, and they say, pops up, says, no, actually, you don't subscribe to the right tier. And suddenly our broadband start looking a lot more like television. And we think that that's going to be a serious disservice, one, to lower-income folks who, and frankly, I think putting the most important social organizing tools we have for activists and informational services that we have behind a pay tier is problematic for the folks who, you know, we shouldn't make information, democracy-sustaining information, a luxury good. Similarly, if you're a small business person and just getting started out, if you can't afford to buy a fast lane, then you'll probably get run over by some of the biggest multinational corporations in the world, like Amazon.com.
Todd O'Boyle is our guest, program director for the group Media and Democracy at Common Cause. And Todd, I wanted to ask you about Verizon. Telecommunications giant Verizon has already made it publicly known that they hope to impose taxation on the internet highways, where some people won't have the same access as those without a lot of bucks. You want to talk about Verizon and what they've stated publicly?
Sure. I was in court in the audience in September when they said, rather infamously, we would be, in not so many words, they said, but for these rules, we would be erecting toll booths and fast lanes and slow lanes on the internet. So now that these rules are set aside, we're in a whole new world. We did some research at Common Cause, and we found that Verizon had spent north of $50 million over the last few years on lobbying and campaign contributions to get their way. And if they can't put client-friendly legislators in Congress, then they'll just bring, they'll use whatever means they have at their disposal, and they'll bring questionable lawsuits and set aside basic, hard-fought, common-sense consumer protection laws. So they've proven that they're willing to spend whatever, wherever is necessary to get their way. But again, I stress that they may have won this round, but it's very clear that the FCC could fix this. And if listeners are interested, they can go to commoncause.org/openinternet, all one word, and they can add their name to our petition. We'll be visiting the FCC and calling on them to stand up to Verizon, stand up to the major telecommunications providers, and write rules that will protect consumers.
Todd, explain to our listeners what exactly does the FCC have to do in order to change these rules to pass muster with the judicial branch?
Sure. It's a little technical, but basically we're asking the FCC to revisit a mistake it made in the past. In the early 2000s, the FCC decided that it was going to deregulate broadband and leave it without any consumer protections, and they did the so-called classified broadband as an information service. Telecommunication services have fuller protections. And while this gets a little jargony, the court ruled that you cannot name broadband an information service and try and write consumer protection on top of it. So if they just revisit that mistake they made and decide that broadband is what we all know it to be, which is a telecommunication service, then there would be no question about their ability to write strong consumer protections in the law.
And it's certainly true that people depend on the internet now for communications, but from what I'm reading, the internet is going to expand exponentially in terms of as a vehicle through which we're going to communicate. whether it's internet-based phone systems, which are quickly expanding, and all manner of video conferencing and the like. It just seems that eventually, well, maybe not totally, but certainly the internet may very well in the future eclipse regular phone conversations.
Well, it certainly has the potential to, but the growth we've seen in the internet and the digital economy is precisely because we've had rules on the books that protected the openness and the vitality of the internet. Now that those rules have been wiped away, that boundless growth that we've all come to expect and rely on is seriously jeopardized. So this has real implications, not just for our ability to connect and communicate and inform ourselves, but for the information economy, the app economy, and the tech innovations that have fueled so much economic growth.
Given that the telecommunications companies around the countries stand to make so much money if this abrogation of the FCC rule stands, how much pressure do you think they're going to exert on the FCC and the Obama administration to leave this situation alone and not impose new rules to enforce net neutrality?
Well, I have no doubt in my mind that they are going to deploy some of the best paid lobbyists in town, in Washington, D.C. But I also know that there's good strong precedent for citizen action making a difference at the Federal Communications Commission. So immediately after this decision, there has been a raucous outpouring of public support. We've seen our petition has gathered tens of thousands of signatures. And just on Thursday, the chairman of the FCC said, "We will protect the open internet, and we're hoping that he follows through on that." So we're going to be delivering our petition to help him understand just how vital this issue is and to let him know that we take it very seriously.
The new FCC chair, as I understand it, Thomas Wheeler, is a guy who himself was a telecommunications lobbyist, if I'm not mistaken. So how much do you have faith that he'll follow through on that commitment to preserve net neutrality despite this court decision?
Well, I don't think any chairman of the FCC is going to do anything that's going to upset the industry without strong pressure from the public. And so I think this isn't a question of Mr. Wheeler's resume. I think we would be exerting the exact same pressure on the FCC right now with a different chair. So what really matters is that people add their voices and make sure that everyone in Washington, D.C. knows just how important this issue is.
Todd, is there a role for Congress here if the FCC falters and does not do what a lot of these grassroots organizations and people around the country believe it should? Can Congress step in here?
Absolutely. Congress could write legislation clarifying that the FCC has authority to protect consumers. We know that getting anything done on Capitol Hill right now is a pretty tall order. So while we would, I think, welcome some congressional leadership, the surest, fastest, most reliable way to protect consumers is for the FCC to go ahead and do the right thing.
And I'm wondering, what's the attitude, if we know, of the Obama administration or President Obama himself? Has he weighed in on the net neutrality issue since he came to office in 2009?
I'm glad you asked. He, in the past, has been a strong supporter of the open internet and said some very good things when he was a senator running for president. We're hoping that the people that he's appointed to run the Communications Commission follow through on that high bar that he set. He was an avowed supporter of network neutrality, or the open internet, as it's called. And we're hoping that the people that he's appointed are going to live up to his own values, keep his own promises.
And Todd, I guess the important question here is how would listeners who are maybe new to this issue or some people who have been following this for the many years it's been, you know, moving through the FCC and the courts, how would they get involved here to weigh in with their congressional representatives and the FCC?
Well, one thing we can do, there's the petition that I mentioned, www.commoncause.org/openinternet, if they'd like to get involved. But if you'd like to learn a little bit more, we put together a web comic that lays out the whole issue of network neutrality and why it matters and what's at stake at www.commoncause.org/bigdealbigmoney, one word. And it's really colorful. It's a nice, easy, everyday, it lays everything out in everyday words. So we hope that people can take a look at that and then take action to protect consumers on the Internet.
Just a final question for you, Todd, and that is, who is part of the coalition that's fighting to preserve net neutrality now that this court decision came down? Your organization, I know Free Press is another organization, but are there organizations on the right as well, conservative groups that are joining you to try to preserve net neutrality, or is it mainly a focus of progressive groups?
In the past, we've had strong support from the right. This time around, this issue has gotten sadly more partisan than it needs to be. We think this is about really basic fundamental consumer protection that we should all be able to agree on. But in answer to who else has been supporting this, we've had some great support, really wonderful partnerships with communities of color. Voices of Internet Freedom has been involved and really adding to the dialogue and explaining how this issue affects everyone, because lots of communities rely on the Internet to connect and communicate, and whenever you jeopardize the Internet, the Internet we've come to rely on, then a lot of people are really concerned.
Well, Todd, thanks again for spending time with us and explaining this issue, and it sounds like you're an optimist here that things will work out if public pressure is brought to bear on the FCC. So do please leave contact information for Common Cause or any other websites that would be useful for our listeners to get more information.
Sure, they can learn more at commoncause.org.
Commoncause.org. And I know freepress.net is another group that you work with as well, that we've had on the air here a number of times. But I appreciate you being here tonight, Todd, and best of luck with this very important fight.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
That's Todd O'Boyle, Program Director for Media and Democracy at Common Cause, and we'll continue to follow the net neutrality fight that's certainly gone into high gear since this court decision last week.